the environment. It's a term that is being debated these days as people who work to protect the environment begin to craft a more meaningful definition. The environment, it embraces so much. Some would say too much. The environmental movement began with efforts to save the life systems, the animals and forests, the ponds and rivers, and all the miraculous life that dwelt within. But as the efforts became united into the environmental movement, laws and regulations were crafted to give teeth to the effort, and with that came issues of air quality, water, pollution, particulates, toxins, and endangered places and species. And with that, a confusion by many about the environmental movement itself, as the political parties tugged from both sides of the issue. And for reasons that we hope to explore today, the churches fell silent as the earth was rent and the gift of life became exploited and now endangered. We continue our discussion with Sally Bingham, Reverend with the Grace Cathedral in San Francisco, an Episcopal church. Sally, when you talk about this issue, how do you begin to define humanity's place amongst the living beings?
I love that question, and if all of your listeners could have the great opportunity that I had to go to the Natural History Museum in New York and experience that Big Bang exhibit. We are all one. And that, in a sentence, is the answer to your question. But for more detail and how do I come to believe that, it's my understanding that with very, very slight variation, you and I have the same DNA as an oak tree. And when we talk about our connection to nature as it is, think in terms of every time you've ever gone into the forest or to the seashore, the temptation to lean over and pick up a rock or pick up a barnacle or a pine cone out of the forest and take it home with you. I think we do that because we belong to it. We belong to those natural things. They're part of us. And I'm a believer in the Big Bang. I'm a believer in evolution. I think when God put all this into motion, it came from the same source, which is love. And I believe as people of faith, the recognition that we are part of this huge web of life and that we have a role to play in it that is perhaps more important than the trees and the squirrels. I'm not saying we're more important to God than they are, but we certainly have a more important role because we have the ability to reason and think and look after. And if we take the message in the Bible, we're given dominion over these things, and we are just by virtue of that given the responsibility to care for and be stewards of everything that God created. And that means stewardship.
Now, of course, that is where, as people debate this issue within the faith communities, some of the problems emerge, where some people would suggest that this was given to us for our well-being, and others might argue that it was given to us to take care of. How do you sort that out?
Well, just the other night on Larry King Live, there was an evangelical minister, and Larry King asked him about the environment. He said, well, what about the environment? And this man said, well, the environment was given to us to use. Well, I was madly trying to dial on my telephone to get the Larry King show because it was a call-in. It turns out what I was watching was pre-recorded. But don't you have to ask this man? Maybe it was given to us to use, but was it only given to our generation? I don't believe that. I think that it was given for all generations, our children, our grandchildren, their children, and their grandchildren, and on and on and on and on. And you can't use something and exploit it, overuse it, and consider that to be in any way compassionate or loving. If you use it up, it isn't going to be there to use. If you're following my
Sure.
thinking.
Well, part of that is the fact that we've learned that we used to think that this extraordinary earth was limitless. I mean, and I experienced that in my life, where the forest seemed infinite, and you'd cross the country and you'd hear about faraway lands, and they seemed like some other place. We've learned that this is a very small little planet. In reality, there are limits. And I think that's what we're having to face almost in crafting a new theology.
It's true, and I too. I mean, when I grew up, people were still dumping the sewage off their boats into lakes and rivers. Now all that has changed, and we have the evidence of too much mercury in children, in mother's milk, in people, that's coming from the dirty burning power plants. The fish get the mercury in them, and then we eat the fish, and it's this amazing cycle. And if there's an overabundance of mercury, which is harmful, lead, any of those toxins that we are getting too much of because we have not been mindful of our dumping ground, and we don't have dumping grounds anymore. We can't throw things away because there is no more away. If it goes into the ocean, the fish eat it, we eat the fish. If we, you know, all these, with the air too, and getting back to the theological part of it, the first and great commandment is to love God. The second is to love your neighbor as yourself. If you love your neighbor, truly love your neighbors, and our neighbors are not just the people next door, the neighbors are the people on the other side of the country. If you love your neighbor, you would not pollute your neighbor's air or water, because someone is always going to be downstream from you. And then if you can take a broader view of who is my neighbor, I think our neighbors are the people on the other side of the world. And if you're talking about a global environmental problem like climate change, the folks that are going to be the most seriously and adversely hurt by climate change are the low-lying islands in the South Pacific and places like Bangladesh. If we here in the United States are creating most of the greenhouse gases that are causing the climate to change, it's a matter of social justice. Well, it's back into loving your neighbor. It's a moral issue about how do we live our lives and how do we treat other people. These are issues that have always involved the faith community, the social justice side, the environmental justice side, if you will, is what brings the church into this.
I think you make such a great point about this concept of neighbor, because it can be taken quite almost too literally. You know, your neighbor, the people that you come in contact with. But this is a global community now, and we are all neighbors, and we share the same air and now the same water, and we share the same fate.
That's
and
right.
And we're learning that. So we need, again, to, in essence, broaden out our theological perspective to embrace all the people on the earth as neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, if we care for our neighbors, we must care for those who we may not see
mm-hmm.
and know.
Never mind the next generations, you know, they're part of they're our neighbors too, the people that come after us. And other species are our neighbors.
I was going to ask you about that. I'm just curious if you, you know, from a theological perspective, I mean, for example, you know, there's a difference between Old Testament covenant and the New Testament covenant, but certainly a huge story of the Old Testament is the story of Noah. What can you tell us about that in terms of your interpretation of that, about mankind and the animals?
Well, sometimes it's said that the first Endangered Species Act was between God and Noah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this changed as well with the emergence of Christianity, Christ, who was a practitioner of love for the gentle lambs in his flock.
Mm-hmm.
What are the lessons to be learned from this in terms of environmental stewardship?
Well, Jesus always sided with the marginalized. And you'll remember from some of the parables that he went outside of his own group and took in the Samaritans and took in women who were considered, you know, untouchable, took in beggars and tax collectors who were also seen as the enemy. Now, there was probably not the amount of environmental degradation in Jesus' time that there is today, but I practically guarantee, of what I know about Jesus, he would have been embracing trees because they are being marginalized. I mean, they are just being cut down at such a rapid rate that it's shocking. And I think that anything like filling in our wetlands, I think he'd side with the wetlands.
Now, as we look out to the future, I mean, some within the faith-based communities are actually now beginning to address concepts of mass extinction. Are you hearing those rumors as well?
When you say mass extinction, you mean like Armageddon or the rapture, end of the world?
No, just the fact that there is an emerging breakdown of natural systems that is impacting the natural dynamics, the life webs that keep this whole thing. It's the mysterious, miraculous relationship, and unfortunately that gift, which was a miraculous gift, is being truly threatened into the future.
And I think that is true. And yes, I have heard that there are species that are dying out, and I also am well aware, because I've had cancer and went through chemotherapy and cancer treatment, listening to the doctors and other people talking about cancer treatments and the demise of our tropical rainforests. We are cutting down and destroying forests that probably contain a great deal of medicinal value, and we're taking them down before we even know what that value is, and losing species in the rainforest that could potentially be the cure to a lot of these diseases.
You know, I also want to say that we're talking from a Judeo side and the Christian side. Are you familiar with Muslim theology?
We have on our steering committees these Interfaith Power and Light programs. In order to be Interfaith Power and Light programs and qualify under our umbrella and use that name, they have to actually be interfaith. And some of these groups have Jewish, Christian, and Muslim folks involved. We actually have a Buddhist and a Hindu out here in California that are part of the California Interfaith Power and Light. I have sat on panels with Muslims who talk about the Quran and that God created heaven and earth and everything in between, and that they too have a very strong mandate for care of creation. They have not focused on it. And it's new to them, and it's an interesting thing that's happening. And the wonderful thing that's occurring is that these Judeo-Christian Muslim religions all come together and agree on something. There's no fighting about whether or not we're called here to be good stewards of creation. We agree we are. All faiths agree on that. It's a very unifying subject.
You know, it's interesting because, unfortunately, so much of the pain and suffering on the planet right now is caused by strife between the religions.
Isn't that right? Yeah.
And isn't it sort of ironic that somehow in the process of not applying what God has given us, from my perspective, I'm comfortable saying that, which is wisdom and our great intelligence and our mind and our hands and bodies that can alter the environment to our will. We can either choose to will our work to serve life or not. And somehow in the process of manifesting miraculous technologies and things, we are unfortunately not applying this gift of intelligence and wisdom to our process. I'm just wondering what you think may happen in the future in terms of the emergence of, some people might talk about, a new dispensation on the planet here that can unite the religions to a greater extent to protect the gift.
Well, this may be the ministry. It may be around saving creation that the religions do unite. Certainly they've tried for hundreds of years to unite around peace, and it hasn't seemed to work, but there's been so much environmental degradation done in these countries where that we're fighting. In oil countries, that when they burn those oil fields, when the rivers have all the bombs and explosions and toxics thrown into them. It takes, I don't have these statistics in my head either, but somebody did a study on what happened in Kuwait after the first Gulf War and the environmental problems that occurred after the war was over, from just things like if a bomb drops on a paint plant, all of that paint and everything that's in it and all the toxics around it are sprued out into the atmosphere and into whatever waterway happens to be nearby. And then without the proper screens and cleaning process for water, the inhabitants around these factories end up getting all that pollutants into their systems. And it goes on 10 years later. They find that people have gotten toxics that have come from the war that was there prior. These problems go on for years. And I believe that as we get more information from the scientific community about the real problem facing us, that it's going to bring religion. I think religion is the only way that this destroying creation is going to be stopped.
I think it's interesting. In this conversation, we've come from a statement that suggested that churches shied away from environmentalism to a point where we're suggesting that the churches may lead the way to saving the environment. That's a big, giant step. And it's wonderful. You know, one of the miraculous things that the great mind of humankind has been able to create is the Internet, and therefore this message, for example, is available all over the world. If you were to address the religious leaders around the world, take a minute and tell them what you think is most important now as we look to the future.
Well, I think that all religious leaders in every part of the world, in every denomination, in every faith, must make saving creation a top priority. And for Christian leaders who listen, think of the Gospel of John. In the beginning was the Word was with God, and not one thing came into being that didn't come through the Word. Every living thing will be reconciled to God through Christ, and it makes creation central to Christianity. And for the Jewish community, the Old Testament is just swelling with how to take care of the land and our relationship with the land and our dependency on the land. If we don't take care of the land, and some, you know, the Native Americans call Mother Earth, we are not going to be healthy unless we keep our Mother Earth healthy. And it's, you can make the metaphor that an unhealthy pregnant young mother is not going to have a healthy baby. And if we don't maintain a healthy planet, the children of God are not going to be healthy, and nor are their children and the ones that come after us. And this should be a top priority for religious leaders to take on.
I want to thank Reverend Sally Bingham of the Grace Cathedral for shedding her light and wisdom on the Wild Side News. Thank you, Sally.
Thank you, Sydney.
And when we return, we take a look at faith in action and the emerging strategies to unite people, spirit, and nature through the churches, synagogues, and mosques to keep the mystery alive. When we return here on the Wild Side News, the Voice of the Earth Radio Network.